the first Saturday of the month, so I'm joined by the opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight.
Good morning.
And on the phone with us this morning, Alex Stone.
How are you?
Oh, we're really good.
Where are you this time, Alex?
I'm sitting down at the waterfront in Warkworth again, just looking at the forest and the little inlet here. It's all very beautiful.
Yeah, it's been a while since you've been with us, actually. You've been all over the globe. It seems every time the first Saturday of the month comes around, you're elsewhere.
Yeah, sorry about that. We were sailing across the Tasman last month.
Now, we were going to ask you about that because you had a bit of an adventure, didn't you?
Yeah, we had to survive a fairly severe oceanic storm and had to sail about nearly 400 miles without rudders in the boat and finally got into Whangarei about 2 weeks ago.
Why do you do things like this? What? I've never seen the appeal.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's people think there's always a kind of, I mean, sailing in nice conditions is beautiful, but sailing in storm conditions is not quite so nice. So I think people always get taken by the good side of a dream, you know?
Is it something you'd experienced before, or is that the first time you've had it that bad?
Oh, no, I have been in a Southern Ocean storm as well, yeah.
Because I imagine, you know, it's all very well to know these things in theory about how to get through without rudders and so on, but doing it in practice must be a completely different thing.
Yeah, no, I have had the experience, and you just have to make a bunch of calls and see how you go, you know.
Because I remember talking to a brother-in-law of mine some years ago. He was quite young at the time, and he and his dad were sailing in the Irish Sea and got into bad weather, and they were both convinced that was it. They were going to die for definite that night, and somehow they didn't manage to. But he said it changes your life entirely. Your perspective alters utterly once you've been through something like that.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I have a slightly different take on that. You know, even if you're in a dangerous situation, you make your calls, you make your decisions, and then live by them, and at no point in this particular storm did we fear for our lives, but we knew it was a dangerous situation. Yeah,
and so
sounds absolutely awful.
It does.
I'm glad I wasn't there.
And so, yeah, how did the yacht fare? You've got some repairs to do now.
Yeah, we've got to replace the rudders, and there's bits and pieces of other storm damage. But all things considered, we're lucky there was another boat in the same storm that lost two people, you know. So they were unfortunate. It was a tragedy on the other boat, yeah.
So it must all be a bit distracting from world and local events, I imagine. Have you been able to keep up with the news?
Well, I found it quite interesting to come back to New Zealand to see, all the news about the Brexit and the Trump campaign. And I'm always a student of the media, and I've been quite intrigued to see how the mainstream media has overlooked some very significant stories in New Zealand in the past week, which is quite extraordinary.
Such as?
There's three or four really big stories in the last week. Just yesterday, it was announced that there's an international listing of the most progressive nations in the world.
And we've slipped back.
We were first a few years ago, now we're 10th.
Yep.
Could you imagine the outcry if the All Blacks went from first to 10th in the world?
Yeah, exactly.
And then there was another very disturbing story about Dame Paula Rebstock's report about leaks from the Ministry for Foreign Affairs and Trade. Basically corrupt, either corrupt or incompetent. She destroyed the reputation of a senior diplomat on the basis of a rumor about what he said with his body language in a telephone interview. I mean, it's almost too ridiculous for words. And the ombudsman has brought out this incredibly damning report of Rebstock's behavior, and it's indicative of a creeping corruption to kind of cover up for Murray McCulley, who is in the past been implicated with other corrupt things. And the media just didn't cover that at all, you know.
Too busy looking overseas.
Yeah.
Well, strange. I wouldn't say the media didn't actually cover the story about the about New Zealand slipping to number 10 in the social development rankings. I read that in the Herald. It was right there.
Okay. It was right there. Did you read the Paula Rebstock story?
Must admit, I didn't.
And what about the story about the Minister for Finance not knowing what 280 divided by 4 is?
I didn't hear that one either.
Yeah, no. Just before we left, the Minister of Finance, for the very first time in New Zealand history, blocked an entire bill with what's called a financial veto, and extended leave for parental leave bill was blocked by Bill English alone, saying it was too expensive. So this is a complete abrogation of responsibility to democracy. He said, you know, because I say so, we're not going to discuss this. The bill is blocked immediately. So it wasn't even discussed in Parliament.
It was extraordinary. And what I couldn't get to the bottom of with that is that, was the veto on the basis of what he said it would cost initially,
exactly,
or
yeah,
you know, was which was four times the actual cost?
Yeah, this week he admitted he got that wrong.
Yeah, yeah. So if it, yeah. I mean, it may have been that he would have vetoed it even on the lower cost, but
but at least have the dignity of a debate. You know, for
rather than the autocratic shutting down of the whole thing. Straight away, yeah. That's pretty poor.
So for one person who can't divide 280 by 4 to stop the democratic process is basically, what's it, dictatorship? What's the word for it?
Yeah, dictatorship sounds about right.
So there you go. It's incompetence or corruption. What's it going to be?
I'd always go with corruption. We're noticing everything in this country is becoming more corrupt. Auckland City Council certainly is, and no one seems to want to do anything about it.
It's
just a shame that the opposition are so inept that they can't make any headway in a situation like this.
Well, what do you do if you try and work in the parliamentary democratic process and these guys just shut you down? I was very impressed to see what the Democrats did in the House in the USA when they all just sat down.
That was pretty impressive, yes.
That was good.
Brought the sleeping bags and the cushions in.
was great.
Now, Alex, you can't see it, but Alan is sitting here kind of glowing and giving off heat with his incandescent rage around the Brexit decision in the UK. So, Alan, are you still a UK citizen?
I hold dual citizenship, but quite frankly, when I can find my British passport, I'm cutting the bloody thing up. I am so disgusted. I'm still entitled to a British passport, but then again, I've spent more than half my life living outside of Britain, so it's not like I have any kind of long-term stake in the place, but, it's still the land of my ancestors. I was born and raised there, and I'm just furious. I could not believe that I could ever feel so ashamed of my country.
What amazes me is the basic illogic of it all, and all the truth comes out. There was a county in Wales that had the highest ratio for the exit vote. This county in Wales also has the highest EU subsidies.
Yes. Yep, I believe there were places in Cornwall that had much the same thing. We want out of this, but we still want to keep the EU subsidies. I think what disgusted me most was the way in which there was clearly no plan of any sort for what would happen if they voted to leave. This was rather like the embarrassing flag referendum that we suffered through here. It was entirely the wrong thing at the wrong time, and the whole thing got used as a way to just flog the current government.
The thing I found most disturbing about it is the masses can be wrong. We know that. History's shown us all the time. You know, democracy is imperfect and the masses can be wrong. We know that. But in this case, the vote was based on xenophobia and fear. And any vote based on xenophobia and fear has to be a bad decision.
And I think also, it does open the idea up that really, if you didn't complete school up until the age of 18, don't bother lining up to vote. We just don't want your vote. If you left school at 16, you're really not smart enough to deal with things like this, and you shouldn't really be allowed in a voting booth.
Very interesting how clear the divisions were. You know, if people weren't educated, they voted out. If people were educated, they voted in.
Yeah.
You know, very, very clear decision.
But it was delightful to see that Scotland went 100% to remain. But of course, that puts
clever people.
Well, I don't know. They got cheated last year. They had their referendum for independence, but a lot of that was based on the idea that Britain would remain in the EU. So the government promised them that. Cameron got lucky on the referendum result there, and obviously thought his luck was going to hold this time round. I think the other thing that is quite annoying is that I would like to be sitting here. I mean, really, there is nothing more delightful than seeing a political career crash and burn, of watching a politician with that look on their face going, I never believed anything could hurt this much. You know, call me sadistic, but, you know, it's just lovely to see these people fail so badly, so publicly.
Cameron or Johnson, which one?
Both of them. And also, I'm enjoying watching Jeremy Corbyn go down, because what a waste of space that man turned out to be. I was quite impressed when he first got the leadership last year. It's like, okay, this is, you know, it's nice to see that maybe the Labour Party is moving back to some form of basic, back to its roots. You know, Corbyn seemed like a decent enough chap, but I look at him now and just think, you bloody idiot. You hapless, bearded idiot. You gave no leadership in this, and now he's just desperately trying to hang on while the rest of his party is trying to sort of scrape him off like mud on a boot. So I'm really enjoying watching him go down as well.
I think there's a wider issue there, is that you know, the whole perception of leadership is interesting, because the media can destroy or bolster that one way or the other. I mean, we see it the same happening here with Little. The Little is a principled man, and there's no ways the media gives him any time of the day. You know,
well, he's also dull and ineffectual.
Yeah, but okay, we have the choice. We have a principled man who's got perhaps a lack of charisma, or we have a guy on the other side who we know is a liar.
Yeah.
A habitual liar. A reflexive, compulsive, a habitual liar. And the media supports the one and says the other's not good enough. What's it going to be? You know, that's my point.
But then again, if we are looking at watching Donald Trump. Now, there's a man whom the media have just given sheer hell to, and he shrugged it all off and walked on through it.
I mean, what do you both take of this idea that the Brexit outcome and the rise of Trump are indicative of a shift in politics, which would mean you could extrapolate it to New Zealand, for example?
You absolutely
or do you think it's just coincidence?
No, I think we've already seen with the flag referendum last year that people, given a chance to vote, they looked at, what does John Key want? I want the opposite to what he wants, because I want to send him a message. I just feel that there's been this move. We're trying to get away from the neoliberal conservative way that we've been doing for 30 years. Tide is trying to turn, but doesn't seem to be getting anywhere, because Labour parties all over the world are filled with mimsy, ineffectual, middle-class, vague people with no fire in their bellies, who just can't seem to get any traction with the public and inspire anybody.
Yeah, for me, the big irony is, although the tide is trying to turn, basically what we've seen with Trump and Brexit is the empowerment of the ignorant. You know, so I don't know if it's a result of just natural demographics. The kind of informed people are a minority. And when there is a turning of the tide, what's happening is the majority of the ignorant or the misinformed carry the day.
Well, you really have, I suppose, if you're looking to an alternative to neoliberalism, I suppose at the moment you've got three choices. You've got neoliberalism light, you know, socialism, or nationalism.
Yeah.
And it does seem to be that the move is towards nationalism at the moment.
Yeah.
I suppose, you know, and it's very difficult to see, functioning track records for the other options. I don't know if you know the story of Nicaragua. It had a functioning socialist government, and that was kind of destroyed by outside forces. So it's very difficult to find examples of compassionate socialism that work.
I wouldn't exactly call the government during the 80s in Nicaragua compassionate. An awful lot of people disappeared and were shot and imprisoned. Of course, it was that government who came out with one of the all-time classic lines during the election campaign that saw the scum actually got rid of.
Yeah.
Where the government released a statement saying that the one of the newspapers, they accused us of muzzling the press. This was a lie, and we could not allow them to print it.
Oops. Yeah, no, I think it's. I question your
use of the word compassionate, because really, if a government is arresting its citizens in the early hours of the morning, imprisoning them and executing them without trial, explain how that's compassionate.
No, yeah, good point. I think maybe the irony maybe is we New Zealand stands as even with all our faults, we stand as an example of a socially responsible. All things being relative.
Relatively, we do, yes. It's a shame we're sliding behind countries like Iceland and Denmark and, you know, all the usual goody-goody countries that that always top the rankings. It's a shame that we are sliding backwards. I'd love to see that trend reversed.
Well, Iceland and Denmark, Denmark and Norway are interesting examples, both in themselves. And Denmark seems to be a good place to live.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've never been there, but it sounds lovely.
Yeah.
I know the beer's very good.
Oh, maybe that's the defining feature of a nation is how good their beer is.
How good their beer is, yes. Well, in that case, New Zealand's doing pretty well. Although, having said that, if I can just digress onto beer here for a moment, I did attend the Auckland version of the Great Australasian Beer Festival last weekend.
Yeah.
And there was this rather disturbing trend, which I noticed, that everyone is trying to put weird flavors into their beer. That this thing that you get in coffee shops now, where you go in and you try and just get a coffee, and some bearded buffoon behind the counter goes, well, what sugary, weird, greasy stuff would you like slopped into your coffee to give it a different flavour? And you say, well, I don't want any of that. And they go, oh, but you know, it's 2016. You've got to have weird, sugary, greasy stuff in your coffee. I just want a coffee. Beer is going the same way. There were beers that I tried there where the weird flavours seemed to be mainly what the drink was about, and the beer itself, it was almost like it had escaped out the back of the glass and run off down the street.
But there's one proviso to what you're saying. You know, we're saying that the quality of a nation depends on the quality of its beer, but there's always a split between the big commercial brands are generally shit, and the boutique sort of labels are usually much better.
Well, I don't know. I tried some independently brewed small brewery beer last weekend that tasted like cough medicine. It was just utterly disgusting.
Comes
from a small brewery, I'm afraid, doesn't mean it's always going to be that good. I really did try some
stuff worse than Line Red or Spate?
Yeah,
what?
It actually was. It was really unpleasant.
You'll have to. You've got a sideline in teaching independent brewers. Maybe you just need to work harder.
Yes. Well, I mean, we'll know that this particular mindset has reached its peak when you go into a winery, and the guy behind the counter says, "Would you like to try the Pinot Gris? We flavored this one with loganberries and bananas and fermented it with lager yeast." you'll know that we've sort of reached peak idiocy in this. This kind of stuff.
Yeah. Cinnamon and washing powder or whatever flavor you like, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty much what a lot of these beers tasted like the other day.
What, cinnamon and washing powder?
Yep. It was really nasty.
And that could almost be the demise of civilization as we know it when beer turns to shit.
Well, yes. I'm sure it'll come back, though. You know, beer is one of those. You can't keep a good beer down. Anyway, digression on beer over.
No, there's one more thing about beer.
Because
beer can continue to decline if water quality declines. Isn't that the base of good beer, really good quality water?
Oh, you can filter it so easily now.
Oh, okay.
You should see the water filter system we have at the brewery here. We work with nothing but rainwater, but you never know what's been sitting on the roof relieving itself into the gutters. So like any decent household, we have an amazing water filter system. So
no, but you've just missed out on a marketing opportunity. Your beer could be flavoured with Pukeko piss.
Oh, no, we don't really want that. That's that is a step too far. I'm sure there are hipster breweries that would say that that was a good thing, but no, I would rather...
The brewing process would kill any Giardia, wouldn't it?
Well, it does anyway, yeah, but, you know, it's you can end up with nasty sort of organic flavours in water, even when it's been boiled, so a decent filter system, definitely the way to go.
Yeah. All right, so, Alex, what are you occupying yourself with up there in Warkworth?
We're just working on the bush block, trying to chase possums and predators out of our bush block, and we found a bit of a bounce back in the rats while we were away. But
I should have come up there with you and brought Mupsley the Wonder Dog. He'd have loved that.
He would have nailed some rats.
Yeah. Yeah. But, well, let me know next time you're going. I'd love to come up there and do that.
Yeah, we're winning slowly. What's interesting in our forest block is orchids are popping up all on the forest floor. And they're an indication of decline in rodents. Rats and mice nibble on orchids. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, so if the little native orchids start popping up on your forest floor and they're tiny, you've got to really look for them. But they're very beautiful little plants if you photograph them up close.
So how big is this block we're talking about?
We've only got about 6 acres, but we're in the middle of a couple of hundred acres. So our neighbours are all doing the same thing. So it could become quite an interesting...
And how are you keeping the possums under control?
With a combination of pellets and Tim's traps, you know, the yellow traps that knock their heads off. Yeah.
Now get a rifle in there.
Yeah, well, good possums are dead possums, so dead possums are good possums, is what I meant to say. So we'll let you get on with that. Thanks very much for joining us, Alex.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Hope to see you back here next month.
Yes, yes.
And Alan, stay incandescent with rage. There's nothing better than a chap who's incandescent with rage.
Well, absolutely. Yes, yes.
Do not go gently.
Exactly. Rage against, well, pretty much everything at the moment. My only problem is that I simply can't log on to Facebook at the moment because I'm too cross. I know I'll just go to caps lock and start yelling at people. So
believe me, you're not missing much.
Funny thing is, it's making me feel quite young again because the feature of our youth was, I'm sure it was with you, like at university and stuff, we were angry with the system and we...
Were you? I wasn't.
We marched and chanted and waved our fists and, you know, provoked the police and did all of that, and all of a sudden we should be too old for this shit, but we're having to do it all over again.
You're never too old for it.
Do you remember the debate about the EU the first time round about going in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and was it, I mean, were the arguments similar to what's being expressed now?
No, it was very different back in those days. I mean, I was quite young when that was going on, but of course my dad was a political journalist, so it sort of formed the backdrop to everything at home. No, it was actually quite different.
There was a measure of idealism in those days, wasn't there?
Well, I think also the Labour Party in those days were very much against it. Because, you know, they had industry nicely nationalised, and the last thing they wanted was going into a free trading bloc and seeing all that crumble, which of course it did, and a good thing too. As you know, we would have never have got government's hands off British industry if we hadn't been in the EU. It was great for that.
Yeah. But there was an idealist, from a social perspective, there was a bit of an idealism about never again will Europe be...
Oh, exactly, yeah. We don't want to go into a war, and this is a good way of doing it. And,
you know,
and of course, it's worked.
Extreme nationalism and stuff, yeah. Which is what the Brexit vote is kind of regressing towards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, we'll call it a halt there. So we've been joined by our opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, who will be back with us on the first Saturday of next month. And hopefully by then we'll be starting to get a bit of a sense of who might be putting their hand up for the local board election.
Let's hope so, because, gosh, it's been quiet.
Yeah, though the council, Bill Ralston, is on the island campaigning for the Waitemata seat today.
Right.
So trying to knock Mike Lee off his perch. So yeah, it is beginning.
Public ridicule would work on that one, I think.
Well, we'll pick that one up next month.
Let's hope so.
Yes.
Lovely.
Okay, nice talking to you both.
All right, see you then.
See ya.